I was 18, super broke, and sleeping on a friend's couch. We worked at JCPenney's making $5.25 an hour, and all we did was party. One day I went over to my parents' house to scrounge for food. I was going through the cupboards when I found a box of instant mashed potatoes, and I was like, all right, mashed potatoes. And it was in that moment I knew I was pregnant. I would never eat those in a million years. A few days later, I found myself sitting alone at Planned Parenthood waiting to take a free pregnancy test to confirm my worst fear. I stared down at a stack of brochures for things that I never dreamed I would have to think about. My name was called, I peed in a cup, and the nurse came back, calmly sat down and said, "Well, Angela, the test is positive. Do you know what you want to do?" My stomach sank. I loved this baby the minute I found out about him. I just felt sad for him knowing that I was his mom. If there was something I could have done wrong between 13 and 30, I did it. I often ran away from home. I made my parents worry. I cared more about partying than going to college. And to be honest, I didn't have much ambition. My dad used to always say, "Why do you insist on climbing the mountain backwards and upside down?" And I'd say, "It's my mountain." Yet I dreaded the day I'd have to tell my parents what I'd done now and disappoint them again. I finally worked up the guts to call my mom. I was unusually quiet before I blurted out, "Mom, I'm pregnant." And she didn't say anything. It was the loudest silence I had ever heard. My parents let me move home. I packed all of my belongings in the dark and snuck away from my friends, from all that I knew. I started going to a free clinic for women in my situation, and we all sat together, mostly alone, in a waiting room on clinic day. One by one, we'd get up to see a random doctor and then a social worker. The woman assigned to me would ask about the bruises on my arms, and I'd laugh it off and say, "Oh, me and my boyfriend, we were just wrestling." But this was just one more thing I wasn't ready to face. She didn't judge me. She just loved me and helped me look into adoption. That led me to a local adoption counselor. She was kind and compassionate, tiny but fierce. Her words were always soft but powerful. She helped me see that no matter what I decided, I was not alone. I would be okay, and my son would be okay. While I weighed my options, I thought about our future, and I pictured my teenage son lying on the couch, brooding over how he wanted a car when he turned 16, just like all his friends. And I would just have to add that to the list of things that I couldn't provide. I loved my son enough to break my own heart. I chose the pain of losing him in hopes that he would have more than me, more than I could ever provide. When I told my adoption counselor about my decision, she wanted me to look at some parent profiles. I asked her to do it for me. "Please choose a family that doesn't have kids," I said, "and make him their first child just like he would have been for me." Michael Patrick Conway was born on December 31st, 1996. I held him and smelled his hair and kissed his cheeks. I rocked him and fed him and watched him sleep. I memorized what his tiny fingers looked like wrapped around mine, his sweet little yawns, his deep blue eyes, and his golden blonde hair. And after 3 glorious days in the hospital, I wheeled Michael down to a nursery. I stood on the other side of the glass window. A man came up to me so full of joy at the sight of his son. He pointed him out to me, and through tears, I pointed out my beautiful son to him. I smiled, and I waved to Michael, and then I turned around and walked to the elevator. The doors closed, and that is the last time I have seen my son. Michael went into foster care. I had 2 months to change my mind, and I did. One day, I went to Gordman's, and I bought $100 worth of baby stuff so I could go get Michael and take him home. My parents helped me, after some conversation, determine that after paying for daycare and formula, I'd be like $1,000 in the hole every month, so I brought everything back. I finalized the closed adoption, and I gave his parents permission to change his name. And then my son became this secret, this thing we didn't need to talk about anymore. But I was still feeling guilty and grieving and trying to figure out who I was without him. The first Mother's Day after he was born, I went to church with my mom, and every mother stood up and got a flower. And I sat there, silent and ashamed, thinking, I am a mom. And yet I wasn't. I had given up that right. Over the next 5 years, I would get photos of my son and letters from his parents. That was part of the adoption agreement. So I know Michael had a dog and that he lived in a place that snowed and he went on trips to Cornwall, England. And in one of the letters, his parents even said he liked potato chips and mustard. And I thought, oh my gosh, it must have been the Whoppers. Because when I was pregnant with him, I was always broke, but I could always scrape together enough change to buy a 99-cent Whopper. I was such a disaster when he was born and in the years that followed. But Michael made me me. I didn't want to have him reporting back to his friends one day. Yeah, I met my mom and she was passed out at a bar. I wanted to be someone worth finding and knowing. So I went back to school. I earned a master's degree in education. I found a wonderful man, and I am raising three amazing children. And with each step, I thought, this would make Michael proud. I wish I could say that the pain has gone away, but I still celebrate his birthday every year by making a cake and crying. I look through his photos, and I reread the letters from his family over and over again. I don't know if a girl broke his heart in high school, if he went to prom, or if he ever got that car I thought that he would want. I don't know if he thinks about me, or if somewhere in his heart he can feel those 3 days in the hospital like I can. He is 21 now, and he can finally legally look for me, and I hope he does.
Angela Conway shared her story at Ode's Life Storytelling event last month. The theme was belonging. Join us on Wednesdays to hear more. Next week...
After Turtle Gate, my parents let me keep the toys but cracked down on what I could watch on TV.
Ode is a storytelling series where community members tell true stories on stage to promote positive impact through empathy. The next live show is Friday, July 27 at the Marquee in downtown Sioux City. The theme is Lessons Learned. Support for Siouxland Public Media and Ode comes from Siouxland Woman Magazine, celebrating women, supporting diversity, and supporting the Siouxland Tri-State area. For more information about Siouxland Woman Magazine, visit their website at siouxlandwoman.com. The music is by Sean Blomberg, played live at Ode last year. For Siouxland Public Media, I'm Allie Carson.
When there's nothing left to lose, I can fly right if I choose. You can buy, but you can't wear my shoes. Cause I've got nothing left to lose. I'm heading home to lick my wounds. And share with my family the news. I put some miles on these here shoes. I've got nothing left to lose. So hop the midnight train down the coast. Well, I was still wrestling with your ghost. Caught me a bad case of the blues. When I had nothing left to lose, spinning circles in the sand. And down came a guiding hand. To show me the way I was confused. I had nothing left to lose. When there's nothing left to lose. Well, you could fly right if you choose. Shame on me and shame on you. When there's nothing left to lose.